everyone knows the Maisa connected with Lag BaOmer and Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. We all know that Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was running away from the Roman persecutors, whoever it was at the time, was trying to get him, and he went into a cave, and he was there in a cave for 12 years with Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, 12 years altogether. He learned an unbelievable amount. Unbelievable amount. What he learned is not mentioned by the Gemara, but the time in Hagen, in the side of the Likutim, around Chav Gimor, Chav Dalet, says that this was the Zohar. That all the preludes and everything that happened within the Zohar, not the quotes from other Tanoim, obviously, but the parts that Reb Shimon Bar Yochai was directly involved with, what he had learned and what he had figured out in the world, really part of the Raya Mehemna, came out during the time that he was in the cave. Came out during that time when he was in the cave. But I'm not going to deal with what was in the cave. I'm really going to deal with what happened when he left the cave. When he left the cave the first time, Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, they see farmers tilling the ground and working in the different farmlands right outside. They said, Manichen Chayeolam. These people are leaving the life of the world, not learning Torah, but Oskin B'Chayeshah. And they're working in things that have nothing to do with anything. It's kind of apropos around finals time. And is that Manichen Chayeolam, but Oskin B'Chayeshah? I forgot it. So they're doing this and they're leaving alone the Torah and they're doing this instead? How could it be? And they were able to burn up the fields with their eyes. By just staring at the field, they were able to give some type of an ayin hara that was able to destroy the fields. You wonder in Bava Basra what it meant in the very beginning that there was such a thing as an ayin hara? This is ayin hara. That's what they were able to do. They were able to make a physical fire from their eyes. And they're told from a basko and shamayim, did you come out of your cave in order to destroy my world? Get back in the cave. After 1 year passed, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai made a kal v'chomer. He said, the onish of the biggest rishayim in Gehenim is 12 months. If that's the onish of the biggest rishayim in Gehenim, 12 months, then me and my son should spend also, we should have 12 months in the cave. They spent 1 year inside. After 1 year, they came out. Now, when Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, would look at something and burn it up, it doesn't say he looked at everything and it burned up. When he looked at something and it burned up, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was able to bring it back, was able to be mekaken it. What's the limud that we can bring out from this Gemara? It's awesome to be Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, to be able to burn things up and bring things back. What's the limud that we can take from this Gemara? Let's remember who Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was. We spoke about Rabbi Akiva 2 weeks ago. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the youngest of the five Talmidim who came to Rabbi Akiva after he had lost his 24,000 Talmidim. The Gemara in Yevamot Samach Beis Mafeis says it very clearly. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the last of those five that came to Rabbi Akiva and learned by Rabbi Akiva. Now, why did those Talmidim die? Why are we holding of some sort of avelus during these days up until Lag BaOmer? What was the problem? The Gemara says simply, Shalom Nahagu Kavod Zebazet. Yevamis Samach Beis Mabez. Shalom Nahagu Kavod Zebazet. They didn't act with honor toward each other, and there are many, many perushim on what that means. Every Musar Sefer has an idea. Every Rishon has a pshat. And we're going to try to connect Rashi with the Ramban and try to put it together and to say the following. They had no value for their friends. They felt that the world could go on without them. I don't need my chavrusa here. If he would be dead, the world would go on because of me. I would be able to make the world run without him. I don't need him. He's not necessary. There's no need to give honor to someone who's not worth being in this world for. So they felt about each other. Each chavrusa felt about the other. I don't really need him. I could do this on my own and I could probably do it better. They didn't give honor to each other in that way. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, almost like a mida k'neged mida, killed them all to show them the world's going to go on without all of you. None of you were necessary. You felt you were more honorable than your friend. You felt that the world could go on without him. The world can go on without you. Without you, and every single one of them passed away. Then Rav Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon had the exact same issue of those 24,000 Talmidim coming out of the cave. As they walked out of the cave, they said, they watched those people and they said, if you're not acting bishlemus, you're not worth being in the world. If you're manichin chayolam, if you're not able to do what the world was created for, which is learn Torah, if you're not able to do it, then get out of here. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai literally thought that there was no reason for these people and was destroying fields, destroying people's livelihoods, thinking that that's not what a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants. Saying that there's no way that could be what the world is. To that,
HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them, you're misunderstanding the most fundamental statement that Rabbi Akiva ever made. The Klal Gadol BaTorah that Rabbi Akiva came up with. And if you did hear it, then you misunderstood it. And that was the problem of those 24,000 Talmidim. The Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. See, here's the way the Talmidim understood it. The Ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha is love your brother if he was like yourself. If he's Kamocha, if he's doing what you're doing, and he's as great as you, then show that same sort of Ahava to your friend. But if he's not like you, then there's no Chiyuv. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai looked out of the fields and said, if he's not like me, if he's not acting like me, then he doesn't deserve that Ahava. He doesn't deserve to have that. But that's not Pshat. We all know Pshat. The Ahava L'Reicha Kamocha is love your friend the same way you would treat yourself. If you yourself would be in his shoes, so to speak, it's more al tugin chavercha ad shetamu bimkomo. Don't judge your friend until you're literally in his shoes. You have everything that your friend has: the same intellect, the same parents, the same life, the same everything. Do not judge your friend until you're literally in his place and you are him. Then you can start to judge him. Until that point, you cannot whatsoever. The ahavta l'reicha kamocha is to show love for that person like you would show love for yourself if you were in his position. Do you think you would have made the same decisions that he did? You don't know, because you're not in his position. You don't know what he really has. So you can't say to yourself, I would have decided differently, because it's impossible to do so. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to say to Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. You don't understand. The world is all about different people. The world has every person doing different things that I created them in the world for. And it's possible that they themselves are working on themselves slowly, maybe not as quick as you, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Not everybody can be like you. But they're here for a reason. And if I wanted everyone to be the same, I would have made a world of malachim. And it would have just been angels, and everybody would have done one thing, and everybody would have been together, but that's not the world. You have to understand that before coming out of the cave. Here's part of the problem. Shimon Bar Yochai was in a cave with everything you could possibly want. He had food, he had drink, he was able to learn, and he was peaceful. There was nothing he had to worry about. And you know, to us, that sounds like, well, I mean, he only had boxers. And it was only water. There was no coke that we could see. And he was learning all day. For some people, that's Gehenna. That would have been an absolute Gehenna. For Shimon Bar Yochai, there was nothing else that he wanted to do. That was a pure Olam Haba. A pure, pure Olam Haba. It's not only that. Shimon Bar Yochai was learning the Sodos of the Torah for 12 years. Meaning, he was in his Olam Haba and he was figuring out why the world is here, the purpose of why the world is here, and how to bring about the perfection of the world. When he came out of the cave, and he knew that Zohar, the shine, the light that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was shining upon the world, and the reasons for everything and why everything was in place, what's needed for Shlemus, and he saw the Jobniks, the people who are going around doing all these things in the world, he said, what in the world are you doing? That's not the purpose. The purpose is what I just learned for the last 12 years in the cave. This is the reason why everybody has to be here. It's for this, and that's that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, Olam Hazeh also has a pshat. There's a pshat behind everything. It's not just the sod, but there's a pshat here. I created many people with many talents, and there's many things going on here, and many purposes, many tachlisim for everybody. Not everyone is going to have the job of making the world run correctly. You, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, are lucky enough to be able to have the job, of being able to sit and learn and put the world together. But that guy right there, who's driving in that white taxi cab, probably doesn't have the same job. And it's not because he made the wrong decisions. It's because he was given a different tachlis in life. And you have to understand that not only by non-Jews. You have to understand that by Jews as well. That not everyone's going to be the same. Do I want everyone to sit and learn 24/7? 1,000%. I'd love it to be that way. Reality-wise, is everyone going to sit and learn 24/7? Only in Olam Haba. Not in Olam Hazeh. The reality is, people are doing different things. The challenge for every person is to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for from you. And in your situation, what can I do to respond to that adversity? To go up against what the bad, the garbage that happens. Are you going to respond well or not? As an example, when a person has a flood in his house and loses thousands of dollars of stuff. Now you know it's not me because I only lost hundreds. But he loses thousands of dollars of stuff. If he can still say it's all good afterward and see the good in that, he's doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves the most. The reason that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hasn't turned this world over from Olam Hazeh to Olam Haba. What is that? To find the good and see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. Let me put this a little bit differently. See, the way the Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai looked at the world was a simple reading. It was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere, everybody should thus be learning Torah all day long, and anything else you do is just a waste of your time. And I can understand that view if we were living in an Olam Haba. But we're not. So why hasn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned this place into an Olam Haba? It's because He's happy with us. Why is He happy with us? Because we're going through our day, and we have bad things that happen to us. Like what? Well, I was walking outside the door, and I slammed my hand against the door, and I got really hurt. Why, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Why did you do this? I hate you! Is that your reaction? The reaction is like, oh, I must have done something wrong. Must have done something wrong to deserve that type of a punishment. If your reaction is the second one, then you've just done an unbelievable thing. You are the reason for why this world continues to work the way it is. Because if no one was doing that, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu has no choice but to make you into a robot. To make an Olam Haba where everybody's getting rewarded because there's no longer any pleasure in this world. But can you imagine? Can you imagine if you're the creator of a world and everyone realizes they can't see you, they have no idea you're there, but they can imagine, they think to themselves, just what if there was a God there and God was doing this to me and I was... It's so much pleasure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets by a person making the right decision. He doesn't want to get rid of this world. He doesn't want it out. He doesn't want Olam Haba yet. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at the people that are working in the field, and granted they're not learning all day, granted they're not able to do the Chaye Olam, the Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai wanted him to do, and he looks at him and he says, he still has a tachlis, still has something that he's supposed to do, now work on it. I think that this, more than anything else, was something that Rosh Hashanah Bar Yochai had to understand. Rabbi Akiva understood it better than everyone. And Rabbi Akiva was able to see how everyone had their own tachlis. Rabbi Akiva was able to see that everybody had something. Now, did he push people? Of course he pushed people. Because you don't know what your tachlis is, and your tachlis may be to sit and learn for the rest of your lives. You don't know that yet. It's too early to be able to say to yourself, nah, that can't be it. It's way too early. You have to really, really push yourself. And if you really, really pushed yourself, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is leading you in the direction of doing something differently, He's leading you there. It's not you. He's leading you in the direction. All of a sudden a job comes up, or all of a sudden this thing comes up, or whatever it is, something like that happens, then clearly He's pushing you in that direction. A type of a situation where for some reason you're brought up and somebody says to you, you know what, I'm willing to pay for you to go to yeshiva for the next 5 years and just sit and learn. You can get married, I'll pay for your wife. I'll pay for your apartment, I'll pay for everything. I just say I'll pay for your wife. Pay for your wife, I'll pay for your apartment, I'll pay for everything that you could possibly need, right? I'll take care of everything. I'm willing to do absolutely anything for you. You get that opportunity, you get up and you take it. Of course you get up and you take it. The reality is it's not necessarily so. And maybe, just maybe, this is why Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's yortzeit is different from every other yortzeit that anybody treats. That Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's yortzeit is a chag. Not just a chag, but a day where he said, be mitsameach alai. On Lag BaOmer, be mitsameach on the fact that I went up to Shemayim. For everybody else, it's a sad day. I mean, it's wondrous that he gets up to Shemayim, but there's a din on that day that he passes away. There's a din in Shemayim for Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. He's so happy. What's the difference? Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was living in a world of Olam Haba. He lived the life of Olam Haba for 13 years. He knew what it was even when he was in this world. His whole life was about that Olam Haba. And he could see the light better than anyone else. He couldn't even see darkness. There wasn't anything there for him. And because of that, going up to Shemayim was just almost like another day in the life of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. For everybody else, it's sad. You no longer have the ability to do the good things in this world that you could possibly do. It's a possibility that Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's death day is just a complete different... It's a different day, a different idea, it's a different measure than what you would use by anybody else. It could be that that's the difference. There is a line by Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Rishim Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, he says about him and his son, he said, in Bnei Aliyah Heim Ba'olam, if there are people that are Bnei Aliyah in the world, then Ani u'Bni Mehen. That me and my son are basically, we are they. That's that. If there's 1,000, me and my son are 2 of them. If there's 100, me and my son are 2 of them. And if there's 2, it's just me and my son. That's sort of like an acceptance of understanding of where you are. He understood that the world still needs to have people around there. A world with just Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai would not be a very good world. There's no IKEA, no Target, no Jewel, definitely no Walmart. There's no world there. That's the world of Malachim. He understood what other people have to do. But there always has to be Bnei Aliyah. There always has to be people that are working on themselves. When Shem Bayochai said, me and my son get to do that, we're able to do that. This, perhaps, is a lesson that we can learn during Sfira. What's Sfira all about? Really, what are we trying to do? What is it from the beginning to the end? What, we're mourning for the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? Are we? Do we know any of their names? Do we know a single one of the Talmidim's names, the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva? And I understand there are rabbis that passed away. And when that many rabbis pass away, you're definitely going to mourn them. Completely understood. If that would happen today and 24,000 people would pass away, 24,000 big rabbanim would pass away one after the other, I'm certain that there would be a massive mourning period, especially if it was in a period of 33 days. There's no question we would make it into something. I totally understand that. 2,000 years later, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do with this? We have the information, it's right there in front of us, and there's mourning that we're doing. What are we mourning for? What are we mourning about? What is it exactly? Why aren't we celebrating the fact that Rabbi Akiva got up and made 5 Talmidim that were awesome? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Nechamya maybe. Why aren't we celebrating them? Celebrate the fact that he started over. There should be one day which is a start over. We're starting all over. And I think that kind of is what Sfira is all about. That there's a period in which we sit there and we say, not everything always goes our way. And then comes Lag BaOmer, and we say, there's something that we can work on. Something in which we can look at, the same way that Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai came out of the cave the second time around and was able to fix things up. We can look at our friend and not only treat him with honor, but honestly believe that he is doing the tachlis of the olam. That he really is doing what his purpose is in this world. My job is not to knock him down, my job is to help him with that tachlis. And then what can I do to be able to help him with that tachlis? And perhaps that can lead you straight to Matan Torah and Shavuos. That the 2 weeks that come in between Lag BaOmer and Shavuos can be spent as 17 days. And when you look toward your friend and you start thinking to yourself, he is the purpose of the world. He is the reason why this world exists, and he is the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not turned it into Olam Haba yet. Maybe you could do that. Now, granted, guys, I'm going to end with this. I definitely do realize that when finals are going on and you're trying to go to yeshiva during the day, and you have, let's say, 2 or 3 finals in one day, and you have a morning seder of 3 hours and then an afternoon seder of 2.5 hours, the last thing you want to have on your head is the fact that you still have to go to Seder at the same time. But understand this, and I you got to hold it all the way through, okay? And I've complained about this before, but this is a legitimate complaint. There are going to be times in the future where this will happen. And you're going to have to make a decision. The decision's either going to be give up or follow through. And yeah, I kind of expected to do notes last night and not have 2 meetings at my house from 10 until 12:40. Kind of expected. But that didn't mean I couldn't write up a shmooze for today. That doesn't take me away from my responsibilities, and that doesn't take me away from the responsibilities of writing up my notes. You have to do things. And if you have to stay up a little bit later, you stay up a little bit later. And you have to drink another Coke the next day because of it in order to keep you up, then drink another Coke the next day because of it. But it can't be that you shirk your responsibilities because something else comes up. You knew it was happening. You knew it was coming. Time yourself wisely. Use it wisely. And utilize your time all the time this way. And if you do that, there's no question of, well, I didn't realize that I was going to have to do a 5-hour paper. You knew. Just do it. I told my wife, and this just happened. My wife is also in the midst of finals right now. She's in the middle of a class that she never thought she'd have to take, but she messed over from the Illinois board. It's a long story. And of course, as soon as she came up to her finals, in which she has to write a 25-page paper and a 17-page paper, both about group therapy. Good luck writing a paper of 17 and 25 pages on group therapy, right? After she's writing that, of course, right at that moment that she knew that she had to go ahead and do it, what happens? But she's put on a committee to be able to write an ad book for the Asherin dinner. And she has to put all the ads together and put them all together. And she sat there and she said, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to stay up later. It's not, you know what, I think I'll take off of work one day. It's not what happened. You can't take off of work one day. I mean, unless you want to lose the money. You can't just do that. You're going to have situations like these. And finals is a perfect example. There will be situations where you are going to have a test to do, as well as work to do, as well as some other crazy thing they have to do, aside from your normal responsibilities of running the house. It's not like I'm going to make dinner, so that's not going to happen. So aside from all the other things, maybe I'll be able to help with the laundry. I mean, that's if she's lucky, obviously, right? But that's that. That's that. You still have your responsibilities. You have to learn how to use them all, and maybe lose an hour or two of sleep, and make it up when everything's said and done after 120 when you're in the grave. You'll have a long time to sleep then. It'll be a schlup. It'll be a zis schlup. It'll be really, really nice. That'll be a really nice one. Make it up then. Until that point, you have a little bag under your eyes. That's okay. You drink an extra coffee or two. That's okay. Or you just suffer through it. And then at the end of the day, you look back and you're like, how did I make it through there? And then you have a story to tell your grandkids. That's great. That's it, guys. Have a great rest of the week.